Hi, welcome to the Sam Wilding Podcast, where I look behind the scenes at writing books and songs. I hope to look at the whole process, from the creative spark to the final customer reaction. This time, there are a few more questions on writing and also a cry of, where is that serialised story you promised us? Let me deal with the story first of all. I had a long, hard think about the serialised story and decided that it probably merited a different podcast. A standalone that children or parents could tune into and get what it said in the tin. This podcast, I think, should remain more of a diary, more of a meandering walk through my world rather than a serialised book. Still, I'll get something in place soon along the lines of The Storyteller or something and decide which book to serialise. Perhaps it should be something standalone and brand new. Perhaps I should write it as I go. I'll let you know soon. Now, back to those questions around writing techniques. I got around 20 questions by email after the last podcast, most of which centred around where and when. For example, when did you start? Well, you could say that I started writing original material when I joined my first band, Prowler, in 1977. The first song I wrote was called Kubla Khan, the first line of which I still remember. It was kind of a, I'm Kubla Khan, and I can't stand the way you treat me. Kind of like that. I thought it was great at the time. It was about a guy who was a wee bit off his rocker. Songwriting, good or bad, was my initiation into writing. Only later did my son give me the spark I needed to write a whole book. I don't think I've told that story here. So, this is what happened. My son Ryan was about 10 and I was about 40. We went to Cornwall on holiday to a very damp cottage. And we didn't go on damp cottages or us website or anything like that. We just got unlucky. Frogs hopping over the stone floor in the kitchen and a solid week of rain soon brought on Ryan's asthma. Unfortunately, he ended up in Truro Hospital in a nebulizer tent. So myself and Katrina, my wife, took turns sitting with him. One night, I began telling him a story, and he said, Dad, stop. I immediately got to my feet and said, what is it? It's a story, Dad, he said. Oh, I said. Yeah, he said, it's rubbish. Is it? I said. Yeah, he said, it's kind of, you just forget where you left off all the time, Dad. That dragon isn't called Nori. And the girl you just said waved that wand was eaten alive last night. She was? I asked. Yeah, he said, snuggling back into his pillow. Why don't you write it down? Then you won't muck it up. Good idea, I said through clenched teeth. So I did. And I kept on telling him the story and giving him chunks to read until I'd written about 110,000 words. That became my first ever book, then called The Magic Scales. So I was about 40-odd when I first began writing, and after that, I got the bug. Where do you write? Asked Jenny from France. Well, I write in bed, on the beach, by the pool, in the toilet, at dinner and restaurants, on trains, buses, and even when driving, although I do that with the aid of a dictaphone, and I shouldn't recommend it. I tend to do most of my writing in the morning, often around 6, after sneaking out of bed and downstairs. So, anywhere is a simple answer. And I don't get put off by much at all, really. I kind of filter out all the background noise and step into the zone. Do you ever get writer's block? Said somebody else, who I can't remember the name just now. Not much, but yes, it has happened. And when it does, I tend to write a random chapter heading, like Meteors and Custard, and then adapt the story and the character's behaviour to fit this new chapter heading. It's like a kick up the backside, a jump start. I have to fit Meteors and Custard into the story and it has to make utter sense. I actually did this in a book called The Second Gateway. Do you ever get bad reviews? Asked Harry from Texas. I'm now, of course, waiting for Harry's bad review popping up on Amazon. But yes, Harry, it happens. You can't please everyone all the time. And it can be very upsetting. The first time I got a stinker, it put me off writing for months. And that was daft looking back on it, but it did. Any writer has to be lying if they say reviews don't bother them. They do bother us. When you've had a few, you kind of get used to them. I've not had many, but I've had some. I've had far more good ones, thankfully. But when you hand over a final manuscript, it's like saying, here's my baby. You always want to fix stuff, tamper, tinker and dabble. But there comes a point where you have to let it go. As soon as someone says, you can't write or the story stinks, you immediately agree. And the voice inside says, I told you were rubbish. But it's not as simple as that. In my case, there were about 20 great reviews for this book and one 2-star stinker. And the main gripe of the reviewer was that I had dared to make a goldfish the hero of my book. As soon as I found out he was a talking goldfish, she said, I put the book down. Well, she didn't get past page 20 in that case. Never mind. Every other review she had was fairly nasty as well, but there you go. Still, paranoia is rife in writing. But I promise not to give up next time. And there will be a next time. I'll get the rhino hide on and man up. Did anyone give you good advice at the beginning? Asked Peter from Norway. Yes, a friend of my mum's, called the Reverend Richard Holloway, took time to read through some of my early attempts at poetry and prose. He told me to stick to the prose and told me it would take several books and probably about 10 years before I'd find my feet. You know, he was right. A great man and a great speaker, if you're ever lucky enough to hear him. Coincidentally, I got asked about my views on poetry compared to songs this week. Thanks, John, for reminding me about another part of my writing journey. I love poetry and was particularly inspired by a friend of mine, Greg Addison, who's a brilliant poet in my opinion. His poems made me want to have a go myself, and I did. Unfortunately, as Dick Holloway said, not really my strength. Poems and songs, in my opinion, are two different things. I think poems are more structured and set. In a way, they tend to be more like verses all stacked together, whereas songs can have verses and choruses and middle eights. A song tends to have a different form. To me also, poetry seems to delve deeper into the magic of words, while a song is more driven by the pulse of the music. Again, just my opinion. As I have said, I tried poetry in the past and only ever had one or two efforts published. So, I thought I might give you an example of one of them called Winter. But before that, remember, if you keep tuning in, I'll keep tuning up. But here's something different for a change. This poem was published in a magazine called Perenne's Fountain around 2009, I think. Lichen-dusted boughs stoop down to brave the wash, infused with mossy rootlets of larch and birch and ash. The chill of dawn is sharpened, an icy light drawn down beneath the glistening ivy and holly's jagged crown. The dipper bobs alert and bright, then dies below the hue to reappear amongst the foam and splash the frosty dew. The wren and dunnock disappear amongst broken limbs and leaves, as silver strands reveal a trace of life beneath the eaves. Breathe in the air and feel the kiss of winter on your face, a sudden sight, a tortured light that strives to find its place. With every dawn we sleep beyond, we fail to comprehend that winter, swathed in majesty, is really our true friend. Bye for now.